Chanet and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It is Chanet and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales filling in for Chinne Agwumike today. You can normally catch him co-hosting Sports Nation on ESPN Plus, as well as on SportsCenter on Snapchat and on a number of our other digital platforms here. And Trev, I appreciate you making me not feel crazy because I didn't hold down and do my job when I was out at Los Angeles Sparks games. I didn't get thrown out of any of the games cheering for our friend Chinne Agwumike and her teammates. And so now they kicked me out and I had to go back to South Bend and enroll back into class here at school, try and get right.
It happens to the best of us, dog. We try to succeed for our friends as best as we can, but sometimes we just don't quite complete the mission. And salute to you for making the effort, dog, but we just need a little bit more out of you next time you get out there, dog.
I was going to say, you know what? To quote the internet term, I've got to understand the assignment little bit better the next time around at this spot. Now, speaking of going back to school, we had a big ruling as it pertains to the NCAA today. The Supreme Court unanimously ruled that the NCAA cannot limit education-related expenses and payments to student athletes. This is something that on the surface might not seem like a huge deal immediately to a lot of people. And so for some help breaking down this now, what the ramifications could look like, Nicole Auerbach, senior college football writer at The Athletic, joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline. And Nicole, I think I saw your tweet that every sports writer gets into this to cover court hearings and structure their summer around Senate hearings. So I know this has been an exciting time for you. But when you saw this ruling, a unanimous ruling against the NCAA on this front, what was the first thought that came to mind for you?
Well, I thought it was pretty interesting. I mean, you know, this is a court that we have seen, have some unanimous decisions, especially over the course of this last, you know, month and this session. But it's really interesting to see it in this sort of case, because I think we were all watching the oral arguments, or sorry, listening to them. And we heard a lot of really critical comments and questions asked by, you know, really all of the justices who spoke at that hearing. But everyone will caution to tell you, like, it's really hard to make predictions based off of the line of questioning. So you knew that there was a possibility. They all seemed to understand, you know, kind of the intricacies of this model and, weren't coming at this, you know, straight with just NCAA talking points. So you knew that there was that fundamental understanding. You knew that they wouldn't have picked this case if they didn't want to dive into some of these issues about antitrust law. But still pretty jarring to see, you know, a unanimous decision go against the NCAA. And really reading the Brett Kavanaugh concurring opinion, I think was a real eye-opening part, because essentially he's kind of baiting someone into bringing more challenges. He's saying that their other rules are violations of antitrust law, and they had to be pretty narrow in this, but he wanted to make sure that people realized this. And I thought that was pretty interesting, because it's sort of like, hello, bring more cases to us.
So what are the more cases that could come about from this ruling, Nicole?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not a legal expert, and so I don't know exactly what's in the pipeline or what's out there. But I will say it's going to be very interesting to see what ends up happening here with name, image, and likeness, because this is a topic that's already come up, and some of what the NCAA is asking for from Congress involves protection from antitrust laws. And, you know, when the NCAA was originally supposed to pass legislation back in January, it held off because they got a letter that was pretty threatening from the Department of Justice with concerns about this topic, right? So depending on how NCAA legislation is shaped, what the NCAA allows, you could certainly see some challenges about the legality, about, you know, if they add different restrictions of if you go to a Nike school and then you wear Adidas, or that school has a deal with Coke and you want to do an endorsement of Pepsi, like those types of restrictions are kind of part of the guardrails the NCAA has used. That's the word they're using for restrictions. But the question is going to be, you know, how legal are some of these things? And is this something that could be challenged, you know, to go more broadly at the system?
Chinne Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales talking to Nicole Auerbach, the Athletics football writer, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. And Nicole, you mentioned the NCAA as we talk about a ruling where unanimously they were voted against in this on their position. What response have we seen from the NCAA and from Mark Emmert?
Well, you know, they put out just, you know, the kind of statement we've seen them put out a lot of the time, you know, committing to you know, trying to spin this and to say that they are, you know, trying to support their student athletes and kind of try to spin it forward into name, image, and likeness, which is a separate issue because this is really about what athletes are allowed to receive from the school and, like, if that can be capped or not related to education and you know, as you've gone through it, related to, you know, equipment and laptops and post-grad internships and paid opportunities like that. That have to do with academics. So it's really not related to name, image, and likeness. But, you know, it's going to inform, again, like the way that this is framed and the way that, you know, they're looking at the interpretation of antitrust laws. So I think that is something to keep in mind, you know, kind of coming out of this. But I think in general, trying to ignore the Kavanaugh concurring opinion has been a strategy, at least it appears right out of the gate. Because, again, that was the most direct challenge to the way that the NCAA model is set up and the concept of amateurism. He straight up said that, like, this would be illegal in other professions. You can't say, like, oh, people like to eat at this restaurant because, you know, the owners in this area collude to not pay their cooks that much. And that's part of the reason people like them more. Like, that doesn't hold, like, it doesn't pass the smell test anywhere else. So I think, you know, by trying to ignore that, I don't know if that's the best strategy, but that's clearly what they're trying to do. You know, I saw the quote to Steve Berkowitz at USA Today about, you know, well, you know, eight other justices didn't agree with this. That's why, you know, by him. But we're talking about the nine most important lawyers and court, you know, the high court in the land. Like, it matters a ton that Brett Kavanaugh wrote this and said this and was basically signaling to bring more cases and that this court wants to hear them and would be, you know, clearly friendly to the athlete perspective in this and, you know, are not going to give them antitrust protection that they've had before. So I think, you know, it's an interesting decision to try to pretend that didn't exist. And we'll see if that changes in the coming days or weeks. But if I were the NCAA, I would just do a total 180 and, like, promote all the opportunities that these athletes are going to have for paid internships and stuff and just, like, totally shift your tune. But that's not really how they work. They like to dig in their heels. And they're, again, trying to pretend that they've been generous in the NIL front, which again still has not passed, and we're like 10 days out from six different states having NIL laws.
Understanding that the NCAA is going to do everything they can to sort of inhibit the just free-for-all that could occur with a ruling like this, where do you see them trying to draw the arbitrary line of what benefits the academic stature of the athletes and what isn't, what is outside of those parameters?
Well, I think you actually have a lot of things specifically listed as examples in the ruling and in the district court ruling. So I think, you know, you have some examples. They already also kind of pushed back at the NCAA talking point that, like, this is basically a slippery slope. Someone's going to give someone a Lamborghini and claim that it's an academic benefit. Like, and they were basically like, no, that's ridiculous. Of course, we're not going to do that. And so I think, you know, you do have set parameters. You are going to have some leeway up to the school because this is permissive. They're allowed to do things and not cap it in a way that they weren't before. But you're also going to see, you know, again, like other, you know, maybe conferences can do things. They specifically said conferences can make rules on their own, you know, and like schools obviously will get to decide how much they want to, you know, do in this space. Like it's going to be up in the air, but they also, you know, made it clear that a lot of this is pretty narrow and they did give a specific example of academic benefits. So we will know what this looks like. And, you know, I think that that's more just like a talking point to try to, you know, again, instill fear that this is a slippery slope and all of a sudden they're going to be employees, more so than it is like not understanding, you know, that a car is not an education benefit.
Novel concept, people in higher education having to try and justify things that seem obvious to the rest of us here. Guys, make sure you check out Nicole Arbach doing a great job covering college football and college athletics overall at The Athletic. Nicole, we appreciate the time on a busy day, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon.
All right, you know what? Coming up next, I want to stick with this for a second because I think I have the most important sentence from what we heard today from the Supreme Court and why it attacks the very core of what's going on in the NCAA. We'll get to that and some long overdue NFL news next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, and save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. Chenan and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales filling in for Chenan Igwumike today. Our thanks to Nicole Arbach, athletic college football writer who just joined us in the last segment. As we talked about, the NCAA got dealt a pretty big blow in the Supreme Court today, a unanimous ruling that the NCAA can no longer put a cap on academic-related expenses or money coming student athletes' way. And, Trevor, these are always complicated things to try and explain because it's a Supreme Court ruling that essentially says the NCAA can no longer limit the payments for academic-related reasons under the scholarship of a student-athlete. So if they need a laptop for a class, there's no limit to what a school can pay to make sure that they've got those kind of things in here. It hardly becomes an issue of pay for play, right? Like, this hardly just leads to now a spot where we're going to have money being put out here, paying players for what's going on here. But what I thought was interesting as we saw the response from these Supreme Court justices was what came from Brett Kavanaugh, someone who I did not readily think was going to be the guy picking up his suit and armor to defend the rights of players in sports. But I digress. This was interesting in his opinion after this ruling when he said, quote, "The NCAA couches its arguments for not paying student athletes in innocuous labels, but the labels cannot disguise reality. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America." And Trevor, I think in addition to what Nicole told us, that Brett Kavanaugh basically invited people and said, we want other cases. We had to rule pretty narrowly on this. This quote is a direct shot at the student athlete. And I say that with air quotes now for everyone listening on radio, the student athlete moniker that the NCAA created so they could operate the way they do. And that seems like a threat at the very soul of what the NCAA has always been trying to protect.
Right. The soul that is amateurism, right? Like the soul that this is not a business enterprise. He outright called it a business model. So everything that he did in that concurring opinion essentially lays out to the world what this institution is. It is an institution that makes a whole bunch of money and doesn't distribute any of it to the labor, right? Like, that's just kind of what he framed it as, and that's what it's been for quite some time. And so we get this bit of a step towards what we have as far as a true business model in which you would have to allocate some of the revenue to the labor force, right? But there is only so much that they could rule in this one. But I also picked up on that line and the idea that he came out and essentially laid it out as and sort of laying waste to the idea of the innocuous terms. That's the word I was looking for. That's the turn of phrase that I was looking for. That directly points at amateurism as what they like to throw out there is the reason behind they can't issue out funds to these individuals because of amateurism and the idea that they need to uphold that in order to protect some sanctity in that sport.
Yeah, Chenan Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Brett Kavanaugh basically saying, you guys can't make up a term with a definition that you get to provide and then all of a sudden not play by the same antitrust rules as everybody else. And him basically saying now, NCAA, we are going to treat you like everybody else. It's been a wild ride, Trev, because we've seen this now at the Supreme Court level. We've seen this happen at the local level, at the state level, with lawmakers and this NIL stuff. There seems to be a lot of momentum and an understanding on the side of politicians and people that, hey, if you are pro-student-athlete, which also means that you are pro-advancing the ways that states and big-time athletic programs in them that can recruit, there's a lot of win for you there locally. So college players, for the first time, we've always talked about this, Trev, needed an ally. They were going to never have enough power within the systems themselves to make something happen. Now college players know every time I open up my phone and tweet something, every time I put a video out there from the NCAA bubble as they get ready for the tournament here, I have got allies in the media, and I've now got allies at the lawmaking level and all of this, and that's a powerful tool for players who are more aware of this stuff than ever.
It most certainly is. Like, that keen awareness in their place in this model is what makes this entire thing go, because if they are quiet, if they are, I don't want to use the word complicit because that assigns some semblance of blame on the players, but they are just a part of a system that has been sort of cultivated from this institution's inception. So, look, what whatever they were doing prior to and now how they are bucking the system, for lack of a better turn of phrase, like, is helping this cause. And as you mentioned, the allies outside of their own space only further this cause. So as we move towards whatever other discussions that may be brought to the Supreme Court's table, it's interesting to think about how we're going to parse out each of the faults in the model as it stands now. So what is the next thing that goes to falter? We've now tackled the idea that you can't cut off the amount of associated academic benefits. Where then do you go next? Is it a matter of just opening up the discussion for paying for players, or is it a little bit more nuanced on a step-by-step basis?
It certainly seems to be something that whatever that next step looks like is being invited. Brett Kavanaugh seriously inviting people to say, bring more to our table, because there is a very clear disagreement with the way the NCAA does business by everybody on that Supreme Court, and it was very evident today. Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales. That was news out of the world of college sports. We have big news in the NFL pop up just this afternoon, though. Las Vegas Raiders defensive end Carl Nassib took to his social media with a video message and some accompanying text that went up there, making the announcement and coming out and becoming the first openly gay player in the NFL. Carl Nassib is going into his sixth year as a player, and he took to social media and said, "Hey, everybody, happy Pride Month. Right now, I'm sitting in a moment of gratitude and relief. Sadly, I have agonized over this moment for the last 15 years. Only until recently, thanks to my family, friends, especially Connor, Kaysen, and Francis, did it seem possible for me to say publicly and proudly that I'm gay. I'm also incredibly thankful for the NFL, my coaches, and fellow players for their support. I would not have been able to do this without them. From the jump, I was greeted with the utmost respect and acceptance. I truly love my life and cannot understand why I've been blessed with so much. I feel especially thankful to have the support of many who came before, and many even now do not. I stand on the shoulders of giants, incredible people who have paved the way for me to have this opportunity. I do not know all the history behind our courageous LGBTQ community, but I am eager to learn and continue to help the fight for equality and acceptance." He went on to say that he is also giving $100,000 in support of an organization called the Trevor Project, whose mission is to provide suicide prevention services for the LGBTQ community. So, Trevor, this is something that we went through with Michael Sam leading up to the draft, the former Missouri defensive end who was trying to make it in the NFL with this news on the front end. But now Carl Nassib, the former Penn State product, who was one of the Hard Knock stars in years past, formerly with the Cleveland Browns and now with the Las Vegas Raiders, makes this history. And Trev, you played college football at Harvard. I played college football at Notre Dame and spent some time in the NFL. And this is something we always knew. Statistically, there was an overwhelming odd that you were in a locker room playing with someone who was gay. And the fact that we're now at a place where there is a comfort, not only for Carl Nassib, but that there's clearly an environment that's been created for him with the Raiders right now and within the NFL right now, where he feels like he can bring something forward like this, it is progress that's long overdue, but nonetheless, we get to celebrate the fact that it's here.
Yeah, and it's not just statistically that we knew that this was bound to happen. It's also anecdotally, right? Like, there are friends of ours like that we likely know, right, that have struggled either with this identity itself or just the comfort level of being able to express it openly. So, yes, absolutely all the love in the world to Carl Nassib, all the love in the world to the Raiders organization for, again, as you said, creating an environment that is that cultivates this openness and creates this level of comfort for him to be able to express himself in this manner. I think it only leads to us as a media entity and other media entities at large, understanding that this, we want to move towards, as he said, a place where this video isn't even necessary, a place where we all feel comfortable with the idea that, as you mentioned, there are people that are gay within the NFL that have they have a presence there, and it is accepted and it is normalized. Those are the things that you want out of this story to come forth.
It is, and Carl brings up why he felt compelled to speak out, because as he put it, studies have shown that all it takes is one accepting adult to decrease the risk of an LGBTQ kid attempting suicide by 40%. Whether you're a friend, a parent, a coach, or a teammate, you can be that person, and if Carl Nassib can be that person now, by sharing this message, by sharing something that should be private for him if he wants it to be. That's an understanding of a greater purpose in here, and you got to do nothing but tip your cap to that young man for his announcement. So Carl Nassib coming out with the announcement, making him the first openly gay active NFL player. Lots more on that, and also we'll get back to the world of the NBA next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
One of the more unlikely musical collaborations as the world begins to open back up took place this weekend. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales. We'll get to that in about 10 minutes here as we keep that same energy to close out the show. But Trevor, it has been impossible to avoid all of the discomfort around the city of Philadelphia right now, because in addition to losing Game 7 to a team that they were favored against, in addition to being a one seed that now finds its way out of the NBA postseason, everybody apparently after that game decided that it was 1-2-3, throw Ben Simmons immediately under the bus after this game. It got pretty uncomfortable, Trev, for all of us that watched and saw Ben Simmons clearly mentally struggling by the end of this series, so much so that he turned down a very open look in that fourth quarter. We all knew what time it was. Apparently so did Joel Embiid. Here was the star center for the Philadelphia 76ers after the game when he was asked about what the turning point was for them in this game against the Hawks.
I don't know how to say it, but I thought the turning point was just, you know, we had an open shot and, you know, we made one free throw and we missed the other, and then they came down and scored, and we didn't get a good possession on the other end, and Trey came back and he made a three, and then from there, down four, and then it's on me, I turn the ball over and try to, you know, make something happen.
So, Trevor, he puts himself in the crosshairs as well at the end of that, but there's no question the moment he was referring to involved Ben Simmons. This is the same post-game media availability where Doc Rivers, when asked if Ben Simmons could be the point guard on a championship team, said he didn't know the answer to that at that point in time. Was it fair or foul, this kind of public, what appeared to be throwing under the bus of Ben Simmons by his teammates?
So first of all, Joel saying he didn't know how to say it and then proceeding to say it was absolutely hysterical. But second of all, yeah, it's absolutely foul, dog. Like, you feel for Ben Simmons in that sense that you ain't had to call him out that way. I seen plenty of Philly fans getting jokes off and absolutely flambeing this dude on the way out of the arena. So it was understood that that was probably the moment. I think if you are a player, if you are a part of a locker room dynamic, you have the responsibility to kind of shield your guy to an extent. But I think it just boils down to the frustration level within that locker room with the stubbornness of Ben Simmons' game, right? Like, I think that's kind of what's manifesting itself, at least in the immediate aftermath of a series that you eloquently described as one you should not have lost, frankly. So that's what I kind of interpreted as, like, the boiling over of frustrations over a long period of time of a 76ers roster that had just had it and seen that characteristic of Ben Simmons leading to their demise.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to look at it, because you're right. These didn't come just out of this series, right? The inclination and the natural instinct of anyone in the locker room is protect, 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 right? Like, by and large, especially when you spend a lot of time with guys, it's, all right, you know how much scrutiny he's going to face. Doc Rivers has sort of walked some of this back today, saying that for Ben, he doesn't know how Ben Simmons is going to deal with all the scrutiny. He's not sure how he'd be able to deal with the level of vitriol that he's facing today in public after all this. But Doc didn't help on all that, and in a moment of weakness after the game, I'm wondering if you're right that frustration along the lines of this, because it takes a lot to push people to that point. And that gets to the next part of this, Trevor, which is, as you look at the reaction around Philadelphia and you look at that immediate reaction from the team, is there any way you can put Ben Simmons out on the court with this team next season?
It doesn't feel like you can. Not with any sort of semblance of chemistry, at least, right? Like, we have, as you said, put him under the bus, ran over him, probably threw it in reverse, and just kind of took the couple of bumps that it took to get over him again, because it was very clear that they cited that as one of the reasons and a major catalyst for how they ended up falling in this series. So how do you move on from him is another question entirely, because We've talked about it. The number on the books that he has is unattractive, given the performance that he had in this Eastern Conference semifinal matchup. It's unappealing in large part. So what do you find as an appealing trade partner as far as like who's going to opt into that to pay him that much money for the skill set that he has shown that he has and no sort of semblance of improvement on a season-to-season basis?
That's the interesting part of all this, Trev, is I look and say I don't think this situation can work in Philadelphia. Because you know this, sometimes when you get so used to things being one way and when everyone becomes so locked in the way they feel, and Philadelphia for a long time, for a large part of it, fought and defended Ben Simmons against everyone in the national media who looked and said, yeah, we kind of see this guy who's gifted in all these ways, but has a glaring error that's going to get exposed in the postseason. How much can you rely on that going forward there? But he is 24, and I've seen people point out, in that game last night, he did what a lot of people expect him to do. Bother Trae Young defensively, use his incredible length on the perimeter to be a problem, dish out high-level assists. Like, there's a lot of good there, but relative to the expectations that came with a max contract and just the weight of the process in Philadelphia, I think he can still offer another team something, because the issue for me down the stretch, Trev, wasn't as much the limitations of his game. It was the way he let those limitations break his own confidence in himself, right? Like, it's one thing if you know what your game is and you go out there, like, we've watched Russell Westbrook do that for years, have limitations but overwhelmingly confident in spots that breaks through that. Ben Simmons, clearly all of this got to him in a way that just might not be sustainable in Philly, even if there might still be hope somewhere else.
That's what's given me Markelle Fultz vibes in all of this too, yeah. Right? Right where it was clear that there was something there, but maybe Philly wasn't a place to get it out of him. He found some semblance of success down in Orlando. What is success for Markelle Fultz, obviously, in a relative sense, but it was success for him. A fresh start doesn't necessarily need to indict the entirety of the player as a whole. It may just be that this wasn't the right fit. We talk about it in the NFL plenty, and it needs to probably be talked about more. It is all about the situation that you walk into when it comes to you being drafted with massive expectations. That situation that you walk into has to be cultivating of your skill set and maybe even expanding it if need be. Maybe Philly wasn't a place for Ben to do that just now. And as you said, 24 years old, there's still some room before he hits his prime, theoretically, that allows for him to do just that and expand what he's able to do on the court.
And maybe just do it in a different location. One thing is for damn sure, Philadelphia needs an image overhaul, needs to do everything in their power to get away from the idea, the phrase, and the utterance of the process. It is nothing but a specter that hangs overhead and clouds everything that happens under its watch right now in that city. But coming up next, they might not be able to make it work. We will tell you about two artists from two completely different walks of life that found a way to make sweet, sweet music over the weekend. Next, you're on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., our thanks to Trevor Scales, who you guys see co-hosting Sports Nation on ESPN Plus every evening. You can check him out on SportsCenter on Snapchat later today. Trev, we appreciate you as always subbing in as Janae Agwumike is off upholding her responsibilities, balling out with the Sparks and whatnot.
I'm just trying to hold things down for the all-star that is Janae Agwumike, bro. Appreciate y'all having me, as always.
And if you guys missed any of Trevor on this show or any of our guests, including Mike Sielski, writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, breaking down all the heartache in the city of brotherly love today. Brad Lidge, former MLB pitcher, came on and talked with us as MLB is getting set today to start cracking down on the sicky stuff. Umpires already seen out inspecting Jacob DeGrom as the Mets took the mound earlier today. And Nicole Arbach, senior college football writer at The Athletic, breaking down the Supreme Court's ruling against the NCAA when it comes to the payment for academic purposes in the world of college athletics. If you missed any of those conversations, check them out in the podcast, Janae and Golic Jr. Download, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts here. We know it's Monday. We know it's a long day for you guys. We're going to get you hype as you get home. Let's finish this thing off right and keep that same energy. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You can just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Janae and Golic Jr.
And keep that same energy is brought to you by My Computer Career Training for a better life. And Trev, we mentioned our good friend and colleague Janae Agwumike here, who is off with us today and can't be the one to stand up and say this here. And so we're going to say it for her here. We are shocked and stunned that NECA Agwumike, as the names for the U.S. Women's Olympic basketball team, were announced today on that roster. This is no slight at a lot of very deserving women who are going out there and balling at an incredibly high level. But how is NECA Agwumike not a part of that group here, in addition to being Team USA's leading scorer and the MVP of the most recent Olympic qualifying tournament, and being, as I saw this today, and I believe the stat was provided by Janae Agwumike, the only WNBA MVP to not be named to an Olympic team now in two tries? Trev, a little shocked on this one here. We know it's eventually going to happen for NECA because she's that incredible of a player here, but disappointed for the family here, and since Janae can't say it, we'll be the ones to.
Oh, yeah. This is a classic case of make it make sense, right? As you just mentioned, the idea of an MVP, a league MVP, not making your Olympic roster, that don't hold no kind of weight with us, right? Like, we see this time and time again where it is politics at best, right? And cynicism at worst, if we're looking at the situation for what it is. So we do hope and we do trust that one NECA Agwumike will make that Olympic team at some point. But the facts are right there in front of you. The resume is right there in front of you.
That resume deserves a reward. Chinay Ngolo Jr. here on ESPN Radio. So keep your head up, NECA. Everyone knows what you are truly capable of. Speaking of giving people the credit they deserve, though, James Jones, the GM for the Phoenix Suns, wins Executive of the Year. And Trev, we know Monty Williams missed out on Coach of the Year, but someone in that organization getting their flowers for the Suns season that was and continues to be.
It is a wonderful thing to see the roster that James Jones constructed succeed in the way that it has, even with being devoid of Chris Paul, right? Like, Cameron Payne stepping in and knowing that Devin Booker can facilitate that offense to the magnitude that he can shows just the depth and the work. And then you look at Mikal Bridges and the leap that he made, DeAndre Ayton and the leap that he made not only this season but down in the bubble as well. That is a well put together group of talent, and that is all a testament to James Jones.
It is an incredible group, so much synergy and momentum going back to the bubble, like you mentioned here. Excited to watch that team as they get ready for Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals tomorrow. Keeping that same energy. This one was cool because we'd seen the love affair between Alvin Kamara and NASCAR growing over this past year, going back to last summer, and they made it official today. NASCAR put out a great video welcoming in Alvin Kamara, the Saints Pro Bowl running back, as the first growth and engagement advisor for the sport. And Trev, we know that sport is tremendously popular in this country, but growing that audience, getting more people feel like they're involved and welcome in that community, that's something that Alvin Kamara, we know, can definitely shoulder the load on.
He was all in after he saw the initiatives taken by NASCAR to kind of make it a more welcoming environment, starting with the banning of the Confederate flag on race grounds, right? And he has been one of the individuals that's all the way here for expanding that audience. So shouts to him, even though I'm usually not for anything that has to do with the Aints. I just have to typically kind of lay that out there as a precursor, I guess.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to kind of make you say something positive about someone who played for that team in New Orleans through this segment. So backdoored you into that one. But very cool for NASCAR and Alvin Kamara. Excited to see what they can put together. But speaking of linking up, Trev, over the weekend, as we get back to concerts and sporting events and things that feel normal, I was shocked by a video that started making the rounds on the internet. Dave Chappelle, the famed comedian and actor, took the stage with the Foo Fighters at a concert and helped them sing a cover of the song Creep. So, Trev, I got to ask, is there another comedian that we need to get on stage singing? Because Dave actually kind of rocked it.
Ooh, that's a really good question. I would have to go back and see who exactly I would want to get out there on stage. The first one that comes to mind is Kevin Hart, but he's had some problematic moments recently, so I'm probably going to shy away from that. Well, give me some time to think about that, and I might have a good answer for you sooner than later.
It's just a reminder to do right and live right so we can all get back out and experience moments like this in person at stage. I mean, that was sort of a Mad Lib of acts coming together, and it all worked out very, very well. Worked out great having Trev on the show with us today. Always fun kicking it with you. Stick around here on ESPN Radio for what we got coming up next.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.